are listening to Conversations with Nathan Latka, where I sit down and interview the top SaaS founders, like Eric Yuan from Zoom. If you'd like to subscribe, go to getlatka.com. We've published thousands of these interviews, and if you want to sort through them quickly by revenue or churn, CAC, valuation, or other metrics, the easiest way to do that is to go to getlatka.com and use our filtering tool. It's like a big Excel sheet for all of these podcast interviews. Check it out right now at getlatka.com. Guys, Revelier launched back in 2013. They are selling specifically to insurance businesses and then also doctors and folks on the front lines to say, hey, listen, when that doctor's seeing a patient, focus on the chronic heart issue, which Jay knows he can surface because of health records that he sits on, using a little bit of machine learning AI room to do there, but he scaled nicely, broke $51 million of revenue last year with about 10% EBITDA margin. The year before that, about $25 million, so doubled over the past 18 months. Hoping to break $100 million this year. That's the stretch goal. We're rooting for them, funding the business in a very capital efficient way, keeping equity. A new deal done with Hercules. I can't talk about Jay's specific deal, but Hercules public filings, they're usually targeting a 15.5% all-in weighted yield and 11% headline rate. Sounds like they got a good deal done here, as Jay's going to hopefully use that money to go fund future acquisitions as they look to continue to expand ACV, which they've done over the past 3 years, expanding ACV almost 3x to $900,000 in annual revenue per average employee, per average customer. Hey folks, my guest today is Jay Ackerman. He's an enterprise software executive responsible for setting the vision, strategy, and objectives for Revelier. As a leader, he's also keenly focused on shaping and stewarding the culture at the company to attract a robust collaborative team while driving an innovative mandate to accelerate value-based care mission. To make this really specific, Revelier is a data and analytics platform for healthcare. So super specific. We're going to jump into it today. Jay, you ready to take us to the top?
Yeah, can't wait, Nathan. Let's go.
We were just chatting pre-show. Our first chat was all the way back 5 years ago in 2019. You said you re-listened to the episode last night. Did you get most of the predictions right?
More right than not, yes. Yeah.
What was the biggest surprise?
I think the one, as I mentioned to you, the one we didn't get right is we thought we would end 2019 with a business that was generating positive cash. And we didn't hit that point until 2023. But we're there now and really excited about how the business is performing.
So just to be clear, last year in 2023, you guys ended up EBITDA positive, cash flow positive at the end of the year.
We did. Yeah.
That's incredible. Congratulations. Now, I have a bunch of questions in terms of, you're doing a lot of very unique things. You've raised a large round from Hercules in a down market. You have successfully executed, that I know of, two acquisitions. A lot of founders love the idea of inorganic growth via acquisitions, but then they fail with the integrations. I think you've done a really nice job. I want to dig into that. But before, you've also have a really efficient capital structure, I think. But before we dig into any of that, let's talk about what we love, which is your customers. What are they buying from you? What are you selling?
Yeah. And one of, there's been a, one major change in our customer segment since we talked in 2019. So we're selling a data and analytics platform to payers, insurance companies, and risk-bearing providers, think health systems, hospitals, doctors who take risk to support value-based care. And so those are our two market segments. And they're buying a software platform that helps them understand their patients' health and how well they are performing and delivering high-quality care to them.
And so help me, just to be clear again, you're selling directly to the insurance companies for the data, and then you're selling something else to the doctors and hospitals, the front row folks, is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, so think a doctor who's going to see a Medicare patient. When that patient walks into their office, they can pull up in their EMR a result file from us that's going to say, hey, Nathan's here, and we want you to focus on these three specific medical conditions that our AI has identified from a wide set of data that we've captured that these things might be going on with them. So it allows the doctor in that 14 to 16 minute visit to be more efficient, to potentially capture a condition that they may have missed, and ultimately leading to better care for the patient. So yeah, that's a new offering for us.
I mean, Jay, I go to my primary care doctor once a year, and they don't remember the stuff I told them 12 months ago. How do you sit on enough data to be able to tell the doctor, focus on these three things about Nathan, because we learned about these 4 years ago from this other data set we sit on?
Yeah, well, so the thing that, you know, you've probably experienced this, something pops up for you and you'll go to an urgent care setting. You might have a prescription filled from CVS. You might have it fulfilled from a local small pharmacy. You may then go see a doctor out of network and you have a lab done. And so that data is not consolidated in an easy format. We're able to sweep, we identify like a geography based upon where you are, how many miles we're going to sweep all the care settings that exist, pull that data in. We're really successful. We can capture incremental data on 90% of the patients that kind of run through our platform. But the challenge is when you get all that data, you better be really good at mining it because you can have thousands of pages of data. And so we take that thousands of pages of data and we synthesize it down to the top two or three things. And if the doctor is curious and doesn't understand what we're suggesting, they can click in and go exactly to the precise spot in one of those records where we're drawing that conclusion.
Okay, so let's just use me as an example real quick. So like I'm making this up, right? But it's for the sake of the example. Last year I had strep throat. I went to urgent care. I didn't go to my PCP because she was too slow, right? They were too slow to see me. I went to urgent care. It's only 4 miles from the PCP. It's 12 miles away. Yeah. What public data set are you able to use to know that I purchased cough drops or nasal spray at CVS because the urgent care prescribed something?
Yeah, well, we're connected into a couple of the major lab systems, pharmacy data companies. So when we put your name in, we can pull what data they have on your prescriptions that have been fulfilled.
What are those big ones? Can you name the top three?
You'll see a lot tied to diabetes. Like, you know, in our target segment in healthcare, Medicare patients and Medicaid patients, those are our two biggest segments. So Medicare, you're going to see people with diabetes, chronic heart condition, kidney disease. And so those are examples of the, let's call it, top conditions that stand out: obesity, morbid obesity.
So you'll scrape data sets related to those things, not like strep throat from a guy like Nathan at the CVS.
No.
I see.
Yeah. More chronic, you know, things that are going to carry, you know, kind of year to year.
Okay. I think our audience now clearly understands sort of what you're providing to customers. That was extremely helpful. Help me understand how you've priced this. So what does an insurance company pay you, and what would the doctor or the hospital pay you?
Yeah. So our pricing model has shifted from our last discussion predominantly to a per member per month model. So that health plan, that provider, they'll pay us a set dollar amount for every one of the patients in their care. And you know, we bill them quarterly on that. Okay. And they run their businesses under those models. So that's a well understood model and running a health plan. It's a well understood model and running a large health system.
Yep. Okay. So yeah, that makes sense. And then when you're selling to an insurance company, what does that package look like?
It's same thing. It's a per member per month.
Ah, okay. Yeah. Okay. So yeah. Both. So it's two different segments, but it's the same sort of pricing model: per member per
same
month, billed quarterly.
Model. Yeah.
Okay. And what did you change? I forget. Pardon me. What did you switch from? What were you doing?
We were predominantly in a cell phone cellular plan model where you would pre-purchase units on our platform. So you would pre-purchase if a health plan had 100,000 members that they were caring for, they would pre-purchase. They might look at 25,000 of their patients. And so they would pre-purchase the units. And if they went over that, we'd bill them incremental overages.
I see.
And it's harder for them to model that. It's harder for them to manage kind of those overages that, you know, would often show up.
Yep. And I remember back in 2019, you told me that you were serving at that point about 30. I don't know whether the concentration was insurance companies or doctors or hospitals, but it was 30 of that group combined. Where are you, and can you give an update on that number today?
Yeah, sure. So we're approximately 80 customers today. Yeah, up from 30. And our average contract values continued to grow to where we're approaching 900,000 annual contract value per customer.
We have to dive into this. So guys, you do not stop listening to this, and I'll tell you why. Jay's ACV back in 2019 was about 274,000. So he's not only tripled, he almost tripled his customer base from 30 to 80. He's also tripled his ACV. So I want to dive deeper here now, Jay, on how you've done that. Was it inside product development with your engineering team, or do these two acquisitions that I read about come into play here?
Yeah, both. So yes, we continue to build product internally, and we've had some phenomenal innovations using AI in our product. But both acquisitions, Dynamic Healthcare, which we acquired in beginning of early 22, and MD Portals, we acquired in 23, are allowing us to sell a more complete solution and are giving us an opportunity to go back and expand our footprint, you know, as we've proven ourselves inside of the customer segments that we've been talking about.
One of the traps founders fall into is they go say, yeah, if I just had more money, I could go buy these three companies. And they put together a beautiful Excel model and they say, yeah, once the acquisition's done, we're going to cross sell and ARPU's going to expand and the teams are going to have no cultural issues at all. And the tech stacks are going to match. It's going to be perfect. How do you model an M&A process before doing it to try and de-risk the operational integration that has to happen afterwards?
Yeah. It's simple, right? Yeah. 80% of acquisitions fail.
That's true.
A couple of things for us. Our acquisition strategy is centered around identifying product that rounds out the solutions that we're offering today. So when we do that, we're effectively expanding what we can offer to the same buyer. So we're not asking our sales team to go learn kind of the buying pattern of a new executive inside of a health system that has nothing to do with the people that we're currently talking with. So that's kind of number one. We did our first acquisition, acquired a more dated tech stack, and we took traditional kind of data center hosted tech stack. We've migrated it to AWS
which company was that? Dynamic Healthcare?
Yeah. So we moved it into AWS, we modernized the tech stack. Now the same single brand. So the experience for the customer is they're seeing one company, the data flows across the both applications. Culture is important. Dynamic was a slower moving company when we acquired it.
They had 38 on the team when you bought it?
Probably actually a little smaller than that. And we, in the first 12 months of owning them, we sold more new business than they had sold in the prior 5 years. And the reason I call that out is because all of a sudden we were asking everybody to run a lot faster, to move a lot quicker, and how we were standing up new customers, operationalizing it. And for some, they weren't used to that. Some didn't really want to do that. We had some people who self-selected out, didn't want to move at that pace. Yeah. We're really excited about the way the team has contributed and some of the talent that has risen up. But that wasn't for everybody. MD Portals, the second acquisition, much more culturally aligned in the way we operate and the way we move. In fact, they probably have challenged us to move a little faster.
How many people on their team when you bought them?
Yeah, I mean, that was a small team. It was a team of sub 15.
Okay. So, I mean, both these companies, it looks like we're bootstrapped in under 3-4 million in revenue when you bought them. Is that a fair statement?
Fair for acquisition number two. Acquisition one was a cash generating business of about 7-8 million of ARR. Like it was.
Oh wow!
It had been a flat business for a long time.
That's impressive though, because if they were under 30 FTEs when you bought them at 28, generating $7-8 million of revenue, that's a cash machine. I mean, the revenue per employee is through the roof. That's like record numbers. But they were bootstrapped, right?
Friends and family backed. Yeah.
You weren't dealing, though, in your negotiation with some VC that said, Jay, I want 100x return. It's $1 billion for the M&A deal or bust.
No.
Yeah. No. Interesting.
And by the way, on the acquisition front, both of them were companies we had established partnerships with. So we understood one another. We knew how our products were going to work together. We were already out selling them in the market, and it made a lot of sense to just go quicker and move to acquisition.
Yeah, this makes a lot of sense. How did you make sure, I mean, do you have a history at other companies of doing M&A? Like, how did you make sure to get that first one right? Are there any sort of a piece of advice you can give our audience, consultants you use, things like that?
I have done M&A in the past. I wouldn't say, I mean, I was a seller. I sold a business. I was a part of buying three other companies in the past. So a number of experiences, but not double digits.
Mm-hmm.
Look, I think what's most important is the product. You got to have product fit. You can't do it for financial engineering purposes. If you go down that path, yeah, your numbers might look nice for a little while, but it's going to break down. Yeah. So we had to have the resources internally that could support the integration work. So the one thing we brought a consulting firm in to work with our team to build the playbook with Dynamic that we could use in acquisition two, and then whatever comes in the future, we expect to do more acquisitions, which is why we did that raise with Hercules that you noted. But we built a playbook to manage.
Who did you? Can I ask, Jay, who you used? Which consultant?
Yeah, we use a consulting firm. I think they're headquartered in Tennessee, called Ancora.
Ancora. And they specifically helped you build sort of, hey, after you buy the company, do this on day one, do this on day two, do this on day three, that kind of thing?
Yeah. And build the tooling so that we could then manage a broad set of work streams. We would have the sales, marketing integration work stream, right? We had the back office work stream on how we were integrating. Like day one, finance and HR were integrated. Sales and marketing was the next stream to integrate. Then we had kind of a slower roll around product and technology. So they helped us kind of align that, create the playbooks that we could execute, create the methodology in which we would manage a steering committee and track the synergies that we were expecting, whether it's cost synergies or revenue synergies.
Yeah. And this is, just to be clear, I want to make sure I give the right resource to my audience. It's ANKURA.com, Ancura.
Yeah. Yeah. You got it right.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. Okay. So those were the two M&A deals. I'm obviously running the own numbers in my head, trying to guess your revenue. You also seem to be pretty transparent. Are you comfortable sharing where you guys are at last year, where you finished at?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. And I think I've shared them in some other settings. So, 2022, we were 25 million of revenue. 2023, we were, 51, almost 52. So we doubled from 22 to 23.
Wow.
And if our team executes well, we'll, deliver like numbers in 24.
You think you can double again this year? You can break 100 million this year in run rate by December?
It's our target. Yeah. Yeah. It's not our board plan. It's not our board plan, but it's,
yeah, hopefully your board plan is 30% under that, right?
Yeah. There's some cushion.
Talk to me about Hercules. Because when most people think about Hercules, they think about debt. Was the 65 million pure equity?
No, actually it was debt. So
it was all debt.
It was all debt. Now that our business is generating cash, and we have really good understanding of the unit economics of our business, we wanted to raise a debt facility to support M&A. And so Hercules is, we actually had a great deal of interest from a number of parties to back this vision that we have for building a broad-based value-based care platform, an operating system for value-based care. Mm-hmm. And so that $65 million is effectively aligned based on ARR at really attractive terms.
Yeah. No, this makes a lot of sense. I mean, so one of the things that I like to do at the end of every quarter is I go study all the 10Qs and 10Ks from the publicly traded BDCs. Thankfully, Hercules is one of those, so we can see all their deals. For example, they gave Sisense a $34.3 million loan at 11% headline interest rate. Now, obviously, Sisense has raised $270 million of equity with estimated revenues about your same size, $72 million. They also gave a couple other lines to others, but this deal will eventually show in their 10Q. I'm wondering if you're able to share with us like the high-level rate you got on that facility.
I can't disclose the actual rate, but let's call it's in the range of what you just called out.
Okay.
Yeah.
One of the hits that Hercules gets, so maybe you can defend them here if your experience has been great, is they charge pretty substantial exit fees. They specifically charge Sisense, I want to make sure I get this right, a 2.55% exit fee on one deal, and then a 3.45% exit fee on their deal they did with Suzy, another SaaS company. How did you think about exit fees, and was that a big deal? Was that a big deal negotiation point for you?
It certainly was a big deal because we were thinking about what our next financing step is and when another investor might enter, and if another investor entered in the near-term horizon, would we pay that down, and what might that rate look like on a blended basis? So first off, like what was most important to us is the total interest expense that we're going to pay with front end fees, back end fees, carrying fees, and straight borrowing costs. That's number one. Yes, we were focused on the exit fee, and we were able to lock in at a rate that we felt comfortable with. And
yep.
Across the total borrowing, very healthy for the environment that we're in.
Mm-hmm. According to Hercules last 10Q, which would have been the 2023 Q3 number, they had approximately $3.3 billion of AUM, of which 25.4% of that exposure was to B2B SaaS, representing about $840 million of exposure. This is a significant position for them, this deal they just did with you. In a sense, you sort of own the bank. That must feel pretty good. They also say, he's smiling, they also say that their target weighted average yield is about 15.5%. So to your point, if you're looking at a headline rate of 11-12%, they're going to get their fees somewhere around that 15 over time. Did you sort of see that when you ran the all-in cost of capital? You're sort of in that same range?
Our all-in is, I think, in the lower end of the range.
So, yeah. You're a better risk company than most in their portfolios. You're saying that in a nice way.
Yeah, look, if you peel the top off and look into our economics, like we are running a good business. We've been efficient stewards of capital that shows up. I think our risk profile is really interesting. There are not a lot of companies right now that are growing, doubling and increasing profitability. And so doing both of them puts us in a position where we can, you know, ask for more favorable terms.
I can totally agree with you. Absolutely. When you do $51 million last year, what was your EBITDA margin? Are you talking like 5-10% or barely profitable?
We were just below 10.
I mean, that's amazing. Did you know you were going to go to market with a debt deal? So you wanted to make sure you could tell that profitability story there?
That wasn't the plan. I would say Q3, we kind of felt really good about the way we were running the business. And we went to our board and our two primary financial sponsors, Upfront Ventures and OHCFT, and said, hey, we'd like to raise a debt round to support moving a little faster on the M&A front, and they got behind it. So it wasn't part of the plan at the beginning of the year.
Yep. Were you refinancing out any other debt, or is this your first debt exposure at the company?
We had like sub $2 million of debt.
Like nothing. Yeah. So how does it feel? I mean, a lot of founders, they read about VC in the paper and the $1 billion deals, and I'm like, folks never calculate the cost of giving up all of that equity. It's like, man, if you can use debt and keep it, it's going to be way better. But I'm biased. I run a fund that does this. Let them hear it from you.
Yeah, look, I'm a shareholder. I was really excited to bring Oak in 2021. They've been a transformative partner, but they stepped in with a big equity position. All of a sudden I took a look, I'm like, wow, my stake's gone down quite a bit. as you build, you want to make sure that, you got to think about both the equity, equity's expensive, but, it allows you to sleep better at night. And so you go down the debt road, you got to make sure you understand it. And yeah, we feel great about what we're building, how we're trying to use equity and debt. We're excited to go from, we're looking at the next kind of milestone of 200 plus million.
Well, we're rooting for you. I apologize. I got so into this, I lost track of time. I want to be respectful of your end time here. So let's wrap up with the famous 5J. Number one, your favorite business book.
I'm not going to say favorite book, but I'm going to share a book that I've recently read called Breathe, which is a great read about
Brene Brown, right?
Breathe. Not Brene Brown, but the book Breathe, which is really about the art of how you breathe. So it's a worthwhile read.
Oh, like James Nestor.
It's great. It's fantastic.
Yellow cover.
Yep.
Okay. Very good. Go ahead. You have another one?
No, go.
Okay. Ready. He's got his things prepared. I love it. Number two is. Is there a CEO you're following or studying?
I'm focused really heavily right now on ServiceNow. And I think what they're doing is fantastic. And you also look at how AI has played a part there. And when Bill McDermott left SAP to go to ServiceNow, I kind of shook my head and I said, I didn't get the move. And I love paying attention to what they're doing and how he's leading that company.
Mm-hmm. Number three, what's your favorite online tool for building the business?
Favorite online tool? I got to tell you, I'm pretty obsessed with ChatGPT as my like go-to app on my phone right now. So it's helping me be a more efficient CEO.
Yep. Everyone says they're using AI now in their stuff. You are sitting on a lot of data. So I do believe you do have some sophisticated stuff on the back end, but do you feel like if 100% is you're using AI to its full potential at the company already, it's fully installed, it's cranking, like what percentage do you think you're on the way there?
Oh, I think we're as proud as I am of what we're doing. I think we're 30% of the way there, 25% of the way there.
Yeah.
It's been a long way to go.
Yep. Number four.
And it probably keeps me up at night because I think there are small companies who can get birthed overnight and very quickly make claims that they can do things that we're doing or things beyond what we're doing.
The nice thing about what you built, though, is I imagine the big moat, part of the moat that you sit on is getting access just to the data to train these systems is difficult. You already, because your size, have access to unique and proprietary data sets in the space for Medicare, Medicaid, diabetes, chronic heart, et cetera. A startup wouldn't be able to necessarily tap that as easily as you.
It's harder to tap that. And the other moat we have is it is very difficult to win business with health systems and insurers. And so to have 70 of them under contract, that gives us a pretty wide moat.
Yeah. All right. Number four, how many hours of sleep do you get every night?
6.5. Not enough.
Situation, married, single, kids?
Married, 2 boys, 14 and 20.
Oh, busy guy. And how old are you?
56.
56 years young. Take us back. Last question. Something you wish you knew when you were 20.
What do I wish I knew when I was 20? I think what I wish I knew when I was 20, the value of being in a company with great talent that'll push you to be better at what you do.
Guys, Revalier launched back in 2013. They are selling specifically to insurance businesses and then also doctors and folks on the front lines to say, hey, listen, when that doctor's seeing a patient, focus on the chronic heart issue, which Jay knows he can surface because of health records that he sits on, using a little bit of machine learning AI room to do there, but he scaled nicely, broke $51 million of revenue last year with about 10% EBITDA margin. The year before that, about $25 million, so doubled over the past 18 months. Hoping to break $100 million this year. That's the stretch goal. We're rooting for them, funding the business in a very capital efficient way, keeping equity. A new deal done with Hercules. I can't talk about Jay's specific deal, but Hercules public filings, they're usually targeting a 15.5% all-in weighted yield and 11% headline rate. Sounds like they got a good deal done here, as Jay's going to hopefully use that money to go fund future acquisitions as they look to continue to expand ACV, which they've done over the past 3 years, expanding ACV almost 3x to $900,000 in annual revenue per average employee, per average customer. Jay, thanks for taking us to the top.